So a couple of weeks ago, we spent some time with Job 38. And I love that passage because of what really happens in it. So you have God speaking to Job and addressing the wisdom of Job there and saying, okay, yeah, you're so wise, but where were you when I did all of these wonderful things? When I created man, when I created the world, and I set things in motion, can you explain to me how all those things work? And now, all these years later, we have scientists who now claim to know so much about everything that goes on, and they can't go back and tell us how God did all of those things. They claim God didn't do all of those things because they don't understand how or what God actually did. Well, this week I want to kind of continue with that basic idea. So the last one we looked at all the wonderful things God did and the power of God through the things that he did. Today I want us to think along the lines of the wisdom and the knowledge of God. All the things that God does know compared to what we often think that we know. So Job 38 fits in very well again with this idea. But I admit that our discussion on Wednesday really plays into it and thinking about the wisdom of God and how God has chosen to do things and how often we question things because we just can't comprehend the mind of God. We can't comprehend everything that God has even revealed to us. And so, you know, the passage that Mike read earlier fits with that, not being able to comprehend fully the knowledge of God. And I think that the passage that Paul read before the Lord's Supper fits very well into this whole concept that here is God who provided even words that Jesus would say on the cross during the time of David as a prophecy. How does that come to be? How does God even think about those types of things? That wouldn't have been our thought as men when something important was going on. Well, here, we're going to write down these words during the time of David that Jesus would speak so many years later, word for word, and what the Roman soldiers would do at the feet of Jesus. And yet, God can do all of those things. God knows all of those things. I wanted to think about the knowledge of God. When you hear the phrase, "Big Brother is watching," do you stop and think, man, that is just a wonderful thing. I love it when, you know, the government or this entity or whatever, I love it when they're just watching me all the time. I don't think any of us really think in that way. Often I joke about, you know, the government, or I joke about Amazon and Facebook knowing everything that we do at all times. This is kind of a side point. It's kind of joking. But a while back, Cynthia and I were talking about some Greek yogurt, some brand of yogurt that she really liked in our house. I had never, ever, ever heard of that brand of yogurt. Turned on my computer a little while later, and I pulled something up, and there was an ad for that brand of yogurt. Now that's just creepy. I'm sorry, it is, but Big Brother is watching. I say that jokingly, but what if there were someone that constantly watched us, that constantly knew what we were thinking, what we were doing, and what we were saying, even in the dark? We wouldn't want that person around us, but there is a being like that. God is able to know every little detail about us. And he even knows how many hairs are on our head. We'll look at that passage in a minute. He knows our thoughts, our hearts, our motives, our weaknesses, our strengths, our loves, our hates, and the things that tempt us. He knows everything about us. Is that a negative thing or is that a positive thing? Do we look at that and say, I don't want God knowing all of that stuff? Well, we can say we don't want God to know all that stuff, but God's still going to know all those things. Or is it a positive thing to say, God knows me so well that God can help me through anything? Is it a matter of perspective? How am I looking at that? And so I want us to think about it from the positive side this morning. God knows all. That's an intimidating thought in some ways, isn't it? And yet it should instill confidence in us that God knows all about us. He knows our strengths and our weaknesses. This is where Matthew 10 comes into play. Matthew 10, beginning of verse 27, reading down through verse 31, here we read, "Whatever I tell you in the dark, speak in the light. And what you hear in the ear, preach on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. But rather fear him who is able to destroy both the body and the soul in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And yet not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows." This should actually instill a lot of confidence in us. That God knows everything. That he knows all the birds of the air, all the beasts of the field. He knows what's happening to him. He knows where they are at all times. And yet God says, but you are a lot more important than that. God knows everything. I think it is interesting that included in this, it says, but fear, do not fear those who can just kill the body, but fear the one who is able to destroy both the body and the soul in hell. Consider him of more value than they. Think of him before what man can do. That kind of ties back into that last verse of Hebrews 12. Our God is a consuming fire. But these things should actually instill confidence in us as followers of God. Go back to Psalm 130. Yes, 139. Sorry, I had it stuck in my head that it was Psalm 137, so I thought my notes were wrong for a second. Psalm 139. And we've used this passage somewhat recently, but I want to tie it in here because it fits so well with what we're trying to look at this morning. So here's something that David, again, wrote. Psalm 139, we'll read verses 1 to 6 to begin with. Here David says, "O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understood my thoughts afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down. You are acquainted with all of my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You have hedged me behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it." And so here David illustrates the very point that we're looking at, that God knows absolutely everything about us. And he's just one man writing these things. We have a hard time comprehending, you know, how many people are in the room and what they're all doing at one point. I don't know what Paul's thinking. I can see he's sitting there looking at his Bible, but I don't know what he's thinking. You know, I can see that he's paying attention. I can look at other people and see that they're paying attention, but I don't know what they're thinking. And this is just one room. And yet, the knowledge of God is about all of us in this room and everybody else on the planet at the same time. Does it make your head spin to think about it from that perspective? I can't even figure out what's going on outside these windows because the curtains are drawn, and yet God knows all about it. David even notes in the last part of what we read, he says that the knowledge of God is just beyond him. He can't comprehend it. So here you have an inspired author saying, I can't understand the knowledge of God. It's high, I cannot attain it. It's hard to fully appreciate the knowledge of God. And so it feeds back into things like Job 38. Could Job answer all of those questions that God posed to him? He couldn't, but you know who could? God could, because God did it all. God knew everything about it. If God knows all of this about every single one of us, why would that not instill confidence in us? That God can listen and can hear and can know what we need. He knows all about us. And so he also knows how to protect us. This means spiritually, but it also means that God can, if he chooses, protect us physically. If that's his decision. We see that in the New Testament. That God protected those who followed him, particularly spiritually. And in different instances, he protected them physically. Sometimes that was not his choice, because that was not what was best. Consider 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10, beginning in verse 12. Here the Apostle Paul writes, "Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." So think about that phrase as it leads into this next passage. Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. When we begin to think more about our own wisdom and how strong we are apart from God. That's when we need to be careful, because that's when we're going to fall. And then it feeds into verse 13 here. No temptation is overtaking you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Now the last part of that is our choice. Are we going to take that escape route? And yet, for God to be able to provide that way of escape, to know where our limit is, what we can bear, He has to know us. And He knows every single one of us in such an intimate way that He knows and can apply that passage to all of us. We can't do that. We can't handle all of that on our own. And God doesn't expect us to handle it all on our own. That's why there are passages such as this to help encourage us, to help teach us and help set our minds on Him, to put our faith in Him. One of the things that caught my eye as Paul was reading Psalm 22 is that everybody knows Psalm 23. But if you look at Psalm 23 and you read down through it, it's all about putting our confidence and our faith in God. That's the entire point of Psalm 23. And so it fits so well amongst what we are studying this morning. Think about the fact that God's knowledge is sobering to us. It's sobering to know that God knows us so well, and that one cannot escape what God does know. Mankind can hide things from one another, perhaps even for a lifetime, and yet God knows all of it. I've been discussing with another brother in Christ off and on the last few weeks this very concept that some people, when they present an argument, they're trying to tactfully word it so as to hide what they really believe, and so that other people don't really catch on to what they're really teaching. You know, we just want to make it sound good. And so we've been talking about that concept back and forth, talking about how that can be devastating to the church. Because then all of a sudden, what they really believe comes out, and it can be devastating to people who are following along with them. And so mankind says, well, if I can hide it from, you know, Chris, or I can hide it from Mike or Joey, then I'm good. You know, I can hide it from them. They may never find out. And yet, who knows through it all? God knows through it all. God knows both the bad and the good in us. Think of all the bad things that even good men did in the Old Testament. Think about King David, for example. If you go through the life of David, you see that he did some pretty horrendous things. And yet, what does God say about them? Did God count them as wicked, or did God count them as faithful? God counted them faithful because He knew them. That doesn't mean that David didn't have to repent. I'm not saying that at all. Mankind falls short on that now, don't they? If we see one bad thing in somebody, then it doesn't matter what else good that they've done. Sometimes it doesn't even matter if they've repented or changed. Mankind falls short on that. We want to hold them accountable beyond what even God holds them accountable. Thankfully, God knows all, and He knows all about us, and that He is an actual faithful judge to what He has said. Turn back to Psalm 139. I use David, actually, as an example there, because David's also the one writing this passage. David noted yet again the all-powerful and all-knowing nature of God. Beginning in verse 7, he says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, there you are. If I make my bed in hell, behold, there you are. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me," and keep that phrase in mind, "and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall follow me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you." Think about the depth of what David is actually writing there. You know, no matter where I go, there's God's hand to lead me. And there's God's hand to protect me. That's quite an amazing passage, isn't it? Great faith that David had in God here. And the fact, again, towards the end, this concept of darkness and light, and God can see everything in both the darkness and the light. He knows. Can you do it without a light? We can't do that. We can't walk around in the dark, not without, you know, severely injuring ourselves. We just can't do that. And yet God knows everything that happens all the time. I know I've used this illustration before, but it's such a great one. I mean, think about, you ever go into a cave? You could probably do this at the caves up around Three Forks. I know we went in the one in down near the Smoke Hole Caverns near Petersburg, West Virginia. And we went way down in there with the tour guide, and we get way down in there, and they, you know, they've strung lights and everything all the way down through there. And you get all the way down in there, and he stops everybody, and he turns all the lights out. And I mean, you can do this number with your hand, and you're not going to see it. And yet, think about God knowing, even in the darkest places, what's going on at all times. We can't do that. No matter how wise man thinks he is, there are limitations. As Chris was talking, there's limitations to what we can and what we cannot do. No matter where one might go, God is there to lead, to know, to protect, and to condemn. Think about the story of Jonah. God says, go to Nineveh. Jonah gets in a boat and he goes the other direction. God wasn't sitting there going, man, I wonder where Jonah went. He was here a second ago. God says, Jonah's over there. And God sends the storm and God deals with Jonah in that way. God knew exactly where he was. And he also knew what Jonah was thinking and what Jonah, whatever Jonah's problem was, God knew what that problem was and how to deal with it. I don't think any of us would look at Jonah and say, man, he had a wonderful attitude. He certainly didn't. And yet God showed mercy and taught him all the way through that entire short book. It is sobering to think along these lines, but it should instill confidence in us that know that God is always so near. Even the darkness cannot hide us from God. Whether that darkness is actual darkness, or whether, as David was actually addressing there, he's talking about, you know, this darkness that's coming upon, the wickedness, the evilness that is coming on him. As he had done so many times in the book of Psalms. God could help him through all of it. God's knowledge transcends human comprehension. David said that even in Psalm 139 in verse 6. I cannot attain it. I cannot possibly understand what all God knows about me. I can only do what God tells me to do. I can only understand about God what God has told me. That's one of the things that we addressed in the last lesson is so many people say, well, if God exists, God would do X, Y, or Z. Because that's the way that we think. So God must be like us. And thankfully, God is not like us. We can only understand what God has told us about him. Psalm 139. Psalm 139, verses 17 and 18. Here David again writes, how precious are your thoughts to me, O God. How great is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would be more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with you. How precious are your thoughts to me, O Lord, and how great the sum of them. We can't possibly fully comprehend or know everything that there is to know about God. If we tried to count the thoughts of God, they would be greater than the number of the sand. Go out there to the beach and start sifting and counting sand. Don't lose your count. You'd have to start all over again. And then go to the next speech. I mean, it's impossible. That's the idea, is that it's absolutely impossible. You could not possibly count all of them or understand all of them. God knows it all. But man has to be informed. We have to be told the mind of Christ. Turn over, or of God, turn over to 1 Corinthians 2. First Corinthians 2, beginning in verse 10, and this is, of course, the context of what we were studying on Wednesday evening. But we're going to pick up there in verse 10. 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 10, and here the Apostle Paul writes, "But God has revealed them to us through His Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of man which is in him? Even so, no one knows the things of God except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we might know the things that have been freely given to us by God. These things we also speak, not in words which man's wisdom teaches, but which the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. But the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, nor can he know them because they are spiritually discerned. But he who is spiritual judges all things, yet he himself is rightly judged by no one. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ." And so in this passage, we have this contrast between the wisdom of God and the so-called wisdom of man. And what we think God should do is based not on spiritual things. It's based on the way that we think, humans think, which is faulty. It's not the mind of God. And so Paul makes that point over and over and over again. As long as we're thinking in physical terms, we're not really going to understand God, even in the slightest. And yet he says, the spiritual one, the one who starts to think, well, about God and think from God's perspective and accept what God has said, then discerns spiritually. As I said about Paul earlier, you know, I can look at Paul, but I can't know what Paul is thinking unless Paul tells me what he's thinking. The same is true for me. You don't know what I'm thinking unless I tell you what I'm thinking. And again, sometimes even that doesn't work. But we know the mind of Christ because Christ has revealed that to us. God has said, this is the truth. This is what you need to do. I think there is a contrast built into this passage. God knows everything, including our thoughts. God has given us His will to obey. He has instructed us in it. We would not know it without Him. And yet there's man on the other side who has to be told everything because we can't just know. We can't just know what others are thinking. We just can't know what God is thinking unless God Himself has revealed that to us. And so there is a contrast built into that, and there's supposed to be that contrast. Don't have faith in men, have faith in God. God knows best always. We have to start from that very premise. Because there's going to be times when we say, why is God doing it that way? Well, God should do it this way instead. Or even, God's ways are not working. And part of that is because we have not accepted that base premise that God knows what's best always. We always have to do it God's way because He knows what's best. And His will be accomplished. We may not fully understand what His will is or what His purpose is, but His will be accomplished, whatever it may be. Mankind often thinks that they know what's best. I kind of made reference to this a couple of weeks ago, but then we also came across it in our daily Bible reading, and I really just wanted to include it in the lesson this morning. So turn over to Exodus 33. I don't know how many different conversations I've had with people who do not believe in God, or I've read arguments written by such people where they make some demand. You know, if God exists, He needs to show Himself to me now. And if He doesn't show Himself to me now, then He doesn't exist. You know, this is their line of thought. Maybe there's a reason why God doesn't just automatically show up and say, guess what, I exist. Exodus 33, Moses actually says something similar. Now, Moses is not saying this in a snarky sort of way. He's not challenging God when he does this. So the base attitude is completely different here. But think about what happens here. Exodus 33, drop down to verse 18. We'll read down through verse 23. And he, meaning Moses, said, "Please, show me your glory." Then he, meaning God, said, "I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." But he said, "You cannot see my face, for no man shall see me and live." And the Lord said, "Here's the place by me, and you shall stand on the rock. So it shall be while my glory passes by that I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand while I pass by. And I will take my hand, and then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen." So think about what really happens here. Moses says, "Let me see your glory." And God says, "That'll kill you. You won't survive that." God knows what's best here. And so all the people who say, "Well, if God really exists, then he will show himself to me." No, God is being very gracious to them and not doing that, not following through with that. Be careful what you wish for. And yet take note of what God says to Moses in this. "I'm going to show you some things, but it's going to be limited what you see of me." And God says he's going to put his hand over him to protect him. So even in this, God is watching out for Moses and protecting him through all of this. It's not unlike what God does for us. Has God given us enough evidence to show his glory, to show who he is, to show us his knowledge? Absolutely. And God is still there protecting us too in all ways. There are reasons why God doesn't appear to us directly. Maybe we should just trust him on why he's not doing that. Psalm 144, verses 3 and 4, there we read, "Lord, what is man that you take knowledge of him? Or the son of man that you are mindful of him? Man is like a breath, his days are like a passing shadow." Take that and kind of plug that into what just happened in Exodus 33. God knew all about Moses, who he was, what Moses could and should accomplish, set him about doing his work, and yet think about it from that perspective that God took the time to know who Moses was, to use Moses to the benefit of God's kingdom or God's plan. And he does that with us too. What are we in comparison to God? You know, what do we know in comparison to God? Only what God allows us to know. You know, we started with that basic premise a couple of weeks ago, that man does accomplish great things, and yet it's only because God has designed him with the abilities to do those things. What is man that you should take knowledge of him? And yet God does. Now if you would turn back to Hebrews 12. Thought it was interesting that Kristen decided to read Hebrews 12 when I was planning on using at least part of Hebrews 12 in the lesson this morning. Man has shortcomings. Even when we try to do our absolute best, man has shortcomings. Man falters, and yet God knows best. Look at verses 9 and 10. Here the Hebrew writer writes, "Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed," meaning the earthly fathers, "for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. But he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness." And so, you know, I don't think that there are many fathers out there who say, "Man, this is just the worst possible fathering I could do. Let's do it that way." Generally speaking, fathers try to do their absolute best, and yet they make mistakes. And yet the Hebrew writer here says, but God doesn't make those mistakes. Everything God does is for our profit, to make us better, to make us more like him. He for our profit, every single time. And that's the difference. God always knows what's best. God always knows what needs to be done. Even when we fall short, even when we fail. Let's wind down this morning. Knowing that God is with us and that He knows us and that He knows our very thoughts is intimidating. It should be intimidating for us in some ways. But it should also be a useful aid for us. Think about it in this manner. If Jesus were standing right next to you, would you be happy with what you are or were talking about? Or the way that you might have been dressed in a certain time? What we were thinking about? If we were standing side by side with Jesus, would we change some of the things about ourselves that we tend to do? But we have to stop and think that Jesus is there. Jesus is always there. He knows everything at all times. And so it should help us to stop and say, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. Maybe I should make this adjustment or that adjustment. Maybe I should fix this or that. When we're tempted to sin, we should remind ourselves that God is right beside us and all around us. And that should help us to deter sin. Am I saying that's always going to be successful? Obviously not, because we're human. We make those mistakes. But it should help us. It should help us. It should help with that way of escape that we talked about from 1 Corinthians. It should also help us to know that no matter what happens on this earth, God knows what's happening. God's going to remember it. And in the grand scheme of things, whatever happens in this life doesn't really matter. God remembers. God knows our strengths, our weaknesses. He knows our hardships, and He knows our heartaches. And He is there, and He's willing to help us through it all. There's nothing brand new in this lesson this morning, nor was there intended to be anything brand new. I know there's a lot of things that are going on in the world, and I think little reminders about the almighty power of God are just good things to step back and remind ourselves of on a continual basis, but even as a group sometimes too. So I hope these things are beneficial, and I hope that they're encouraging too.